Otherwise, the three of us wouldn't be the only ones left.
Only the men leave, Fran said. That's how the curse works. Male swans can't stay, and female swans can't go.
I went, I argued. That's the whole point of this.
Yes, but you came back.
I rolled my shoulders and groaned. That's how this conversation started. The circular logic would drive me crazy if I tried to untangle it. A new and equally irrelevant question came to mind, but it would bother me unless I asked. Who was the last male swan?
Fran tapped her chin with one thin finger. I'm not really sure. I'd have to look at the family tree.
It's been that long since someone had a son? I asked.
It shouldn't have been a surprise, since I couldn't recall any male relatives at the few family reunions I'd attended growing up. Seems so, Fran said. Swan females are dominant. It's genetic. She nodded through the statement as if it was backed up by facts.
That's not how science works.
It's not science, darling. It's our legacy. It was also our legacy to find husbands willing to take our name and not the other way around.
I rubbed my temple. Fran and Clara were consistently two of the worst historians I'd ever met, regularly interweaving fact with fiction all my life. They had some good stories, but tall tales were all they were. I changed the subject. No one came to my cafe today. Not a single soul.
Maybe you should reconsider listing your ingredients, Clara said. We list everything that goes into our products. Since it's something folks are worried about, you can use the gesture to clear the air.
I pursed my lips. Grandma had taken great care to teach me everything she knew about tea, gardening, and the sea. I choked back a pinch of pride and a pound of missing her so much I could die. I guess I could. The ingredient list only takes folks so far, though. The measurements and brewing process were what made the tea special.
Exactly.
Clara tugged the ends of my hair. Our sister loved you more than anything, and she entrusted you with all her secrets. We respect that. But honey, it's not worth villainizing yourself to protect them. She'd want to see you succeed.
Fran locked her hand over one hip. What about that grand opening you've been talking about? Now might be the perfect time to invite everyone over and reintroduce yourself. We can print and hang photos of you growing up here. Remind the naysayers that they know you and you are pure goodness.
Maybe, I said, turning away. I lifted a pint of beautiful amber honey from the nearby display and examined the comb trapped inside. Who do you think poisoned Mr. Payne?
Aunt Clara and Aunt Fran had said it themselves. I'd been gone a while. I'd missed things.
And how did the police know he didn't accidentally overdose on a prescription or something?
We can ask around, Clara offered. See if anyone has another suspect in mind.
Okay. Maybe there's someone out there who really did want him dead.
Fran handed me another jar of honey. Take them both for your ginger tea.
Thanks. I kissed her cheek, then Clara's. Let me know what you find out about Mr. Payne.
Will do, they called after me. Think about that party.
Okay.
I stepped onto the sidewalk with renewed vigor and a completely different idea brewing in my mind. I knew how I could clear my name and get justice for Mr. Payne. I'd find out who really killed him and make sure Detective Hayes took him to jail. I hurried home, formulating a plan to covertly survey the town, but stopped short on the boardwalk outside my house. Detective Hayes and his big SUV were situated in front of my home.
Afternoon,
he said, lifting a disposable cup in greeting.
What are you doing? I asked. How long have you been sitting there?
He shook the cup and sucked his teeth.
About an hour.
Why?
I cradled the jars of honey against my chest.
Thinking.
He set the cup next to a takeout bag sitting on his truck's hood. Do you want to come in? I asked, hoping he wasn't full and that I could ply him with sweets to see if he'd share some details on how the investigation was going. It'd be nice to have a guest, I added. No one came in today. Might have had something to do with your announcement that my products might be poisoned. I bit my lip. I hadn't meant to say that. I got madder every time I remembered why the town was giving me the silent treatment and gossiping about me online. He tipped his head in what looked like a pitiful apology.
No, thanks. I can't stay.
Yet he claimed to have been here an hour. What was his game? Well, can I help you with something then? I asked. You must have waited for a reason.
Not really. I've been exploring the town, but I keep ending up here. I think it's the view.
He made a show of looking long and hard in each direction.
It's as if I can see for miles.
You can, I said. It's the highest natural point on the island. He crossed his arms and bobbed his head.
It's beautiful. No lights, though.
He shifted his stance and cast his gaze wide, twisting at the waist.
I was out here last night, walking, thinking, and I couldn't see a thing.
I waited for his point. It's dark at night? What could I say to that? True.
It seems like Benedict Payne would have known that,
he said, turning sharp gray eyes back on me.
Lifelong resident and all.
So why was he out walking in the dark? I asked. I hope you didn't wait here an hour to ask me that, because I have no idea.
If you had to guess.
He pushed. I released a long breath. Maybe it wasn't dark when he started his walk. That was what had happened to me. I'd left before sunset and returned at twilight. It gets dark fast some nights, especially if there's cloud cover. Maybe the dark came faster than he'd expected. Or maybe he got sick and slowed down, and that made the difference. Detective Hayes watched me intently. I clamped my mouth shut.
Huh,
he grunted. I fidgeted with the hem of my sleeve, wholly uncomfortable with his prodding looks and the subject matter. So, what made you choose Charm for your big move? I asked, praying he'd let me change the subject. Was it pure coincidence that he'd arrived on the night of a murder? Was I overthinking? It's not exactly a hot spot for someone in your line of work. Detective Hayes looked out over the sandy beach and breaking waves.
I'm not sure why everyone doesn't live here. This place looks like a postcard.
That was true, but his decision to relocate here wasn't that simple. I'd spent some time researching U.S. Marshal Grady Hayes last night after picking up his business card. He'd been a big shot in Charlotte before he'd apparently walked away. Still, it seems odd to leave a prestigious job in the city to play detective to a puny island town.
I'm not playing.
He lifted the badge hanging around his neck.
I needed a change, so I changed.
Were you fired? Could he have done something sketchy to collar a criminal and been banished from the agency for it? Seasons of my favorite cop dramas blurred through my mind. What kind of things did a guy have to do to wind up playing Barney Fife to a town of 2,000 year-round residents and 4,000 seasonal ones? Assault? Drugs? Case tampering?
No, nothing like that,
he said. There was profound sadness in his eyes, and I regretted my implication immediately. Sorry, I pushed strands of windblown hair away from my face. I didn't mean to drag up anything unpleasant.
You didn't.
He cleared his throat.
I looked you up too, you know.
Yeah?
Yep.
He squinted against the sun and growing breeze. I jostled the jars of honey into one curved arm, using the other hand to keep my skirt from blowing over my head. Find anything good?
That's debatable.
His lips twisted into a sudden smile that reached his eyes.
Nothing to support my case.
What was that supposed to mean? Fresh alarm shot through me. What did you read? His smile grew and a dimple sank in, transforming him into someone carefree and youthful. The kind of guy every woman thinks will steal her heart and change her life forever. Basically the opposite of who he was. Dimples were deceiving. "What is that face?" I asked. "What did you find about me that makes you look like you want to burst into laughter?" My entire life passed before my eyes. An endless parade of goofy island events, college parties for pastry nerds, and my temporary position as queen bee to advertise my aunt's honey. "What?" I begged. He looked me over from top to bottom, then shook his head.
"Nothing bad."
He collected his lunch trash and climbed behind the wheel of his truck. So much for feeding him cake and offering to help find Mr. Payne's killer. He'd only stayed at my shop long enough to provoke me and leave, a habit of his I was already learning to hate.
"Chin up, Swan,"
he said, hanging a tanned elbow through the open window.
"I think we're going to get along just fine, if I don't have to arrest you."
I crossed my arms and narrowed my eyes. "You're not going to arrest me." I was going to find the real killer, clear my name, and save my shop with or without his help. Right after, I Googled myself. Chapter 4. I'd searched my name 20 different ways, looking for what had put that goofy smile on the detective's face, and I'd found all the predictable nightmares online. I'd never been cool, and the internet indisputably proved it. I'd closed the laptop after coming across a photo of 12-year-old me being sneezed on by a horse at the town fair. The local reporters had found that clip so funny they had run it on the local news for 3 years in a row. I spent the rest of the afternoon cleaning tea jars and scrubbing the fridge in my personal kitchen upstairs, puzzling over Detective Hayes and his appearance and charm. What I needed was a walk to help me think. I swapped my dress for a belted coral top that accentuated my waist and a pair of white pedal pushers, then grabbed my matching white sneakers off the mat outside my back door so I could get my daily step count in. According to the instructions with my wristwatch / step counter / fitness gadget, I should walk 10,000 steps a day, though I tried not to take that recommendation too literally. I would probably have to walk all the way to the mainland to reach that number. But that was the Get Fit's pre-programmed goal. Some days, the farthest I walked was around my house, nailing down loose boards and puttying drywall holes. I tied up my laces and marched in place for a few seconds to make sure the counter was working, stepping into the brisk night with my chin up and starting down the boardwalk toward town. The roads and sidewalks would have gotten me to the shops more quickly, but the boardwalk had better views. Plus, I preferred the sound of the retreating tide to that of traffic. It wasn't long before the evening scents of charm floated to my nose and made my mouth water. Greasy burgers and salty fries, rich hot fudge and fresh baked waffle cones. The after-dinner show was in full swing, serving sweets to those who'd eaten at an appropriate time and deep-fried everything to those who hadn't. I stepped off the boardwalk with the enthusiasm of Fred Flintstone following a whiff of brontosaurus stew, then floated across Ocean Drive, the main road running along the shore, to stop outside Sandy's Seaside Sweet Shack, the new ice cream shop next to Blessed Bee, inhaling the heavenly scents. The little pink venue was outlined in white twinkle lights and surrounded by couples with children and baby carriages, rocking in chairs on the porch and lining tables on the patio. I'd had a sensible salad for dinner, but that wasn't going to cut it after the day I'd had. I needed comfort food, and the sign inside the window advertised free smiles and sprinkles. I wanted a little of both. I followed the steadily moving line to the front of the store. Eventually, the man behind the counter tipped his paper hat at me and smiled.
"Welcome to my Seaside Sweet Shack. I'm Sandy. Can I get you something to sweeten your night?"
He wiped his hands on a pink and white striped towel and waited patiently while I took in his magical menu. "Yes, please," I bounced on my toes, feeling 10 years younger. "I'd like a scoop of praline dream and a sugar cone," And sprinkles. I added the last part in case the free sprinkles were only by request.
Sure thing.
Sandy flipped the curved lid on the freezer and tossed his scoop in the air like a Miami bartender. His smile was contagious, banana split wide, and already setting me at ease.
My wife and I moved here last summer to open this shop. We've met most everyone, but I don't think I've seen you around here, he said,
smushing praline ice cream into a cone of crispy perfection, the top inch of which had been dipped in chocolate and rolled in Jimmy's. I licked my lips in anticipation.
How long are you in town?
He asked, tidying up the cone and closing the display lid. Forever, probably. I stretched to accept the cone over the tall counter. A familiar silhouette caught my attention outside the giant picture window to my right, and I turned to stare. Detective Hayes scooted through the crush of babies and bodies on the patio, vanishing and reappearing several times before arriving at his SUV with a blonde woman. Was he married? I couldn't recall seeing a ring, but then again, I hadn't looked, and I didn't care. Except if the woman wasn't his wife, then who was she? Surely he hadn't had time to find a date in the day or two since his arrival. He couldn't have had time to unpack, much less ask someone out for ice cream. He didn't even get her door for her. Rude. Sandy punched my order into the register.
Where are you visiting from? He asked. You should mark it on our friends across the country map.
He nodded toward a giant poster of the United States on the far wall. Little ice cream cone stickers plastered all over the East Coast, identifying the origins of past customers. I'm local, I answered, straining to see over his shoulder as the SUV pulled into traffic. I grew up here and just moved back.
Well, that's neat.
He rocked back on his heels and rested a hand on the counter. I stuffed the top of my cone into my mouth and blamed low blood sugar and a poor night's sleep for my erratic thoughts.
That'll be $2.50.
Oops, I'd almost forgotten to pay. I fished a $5 from my pocket and delivered it to Sandy. By now, the SUV was long gone. It bugged me more than it should have to know the town's only detective was out having fun instead of investigating Mr. Payne's murder. Didn't these things get more difficult to solve after 48 hours? Or was it 72? I took another bite of my cone and contemplated the issue. Maybe I was thinking of the guideline for missing kids. Either way, it had barely been 24 hours since I'd found Mr. Payne by the marsh. It hardly seemed like the time for the investigating officer to go out for ice cream. I gave Sandy a long look. He'd said he'd met most everyone, so did he know Mr. Payne? I took a bite of ice cream to shore up my nerve. Sandy, did you know Benedict Payne? I asked quietly. Or have you heard anything about what happened to him? Recognition lit in Sandy's eyes as he made my change.
I knew him. My wife and I saw him quite a bit after we moved here.
I couldn't imagine Mr. Payne at a sweet shack, considering the level of grief he'd given me about the sugar content of sweet tea. But maybe he'd been involved in the ice cream shop setup, probably forcing it into compliance with his vision for charm. Sandy glanced over my head at the line of waiting customers, then leaned closer.
I heard he was poisoned. It was terrible.
He shook his head sadly.
I read all about it on the Town Charmer blog.
I turned to check on the couple behind me. They were still discussing flavors, so I pushed on. Had you heard anything about him recently? I asked. Before the poisoning? I scanned the crowded ice cream shop, imagining all the things I could overhear if I lingered long enough. Pushing a broom or wiping down tables, for example. Was anyone especially upset with him that you know of? Sandy rolled his shoulders back and cocked his head.
Don't you read the town blog? It covered the whole story as it unfolded.
My cheeks heated at the memory of all those mean comments. I'm just having a hard time accepting his death, I blurted. Things like that don't happen here.
I suppose bad stuff happens everywhere once in a while, he said. Living here has been a dream come true for my wife and I. What happened to Mr. Payne hasn't changed that. In fact, we feel needed more than ever now. Folks come to our sweet shack for something good and familiar. In some ways, we provide a break from the heartache of losing a community member. He smiled warmly. What do you do here? I rush through a mouthful of creamy bliss, trying not to choke on a pecan. My name is Everly Swan. I opened the iced tea shop on the beach last month. Sun, sand, and tea. Sandy's smile faltered a bit before performing a quick recovery. Of course! Hello! His sudden and complete over-enthusiasm confirmed my suspicions. He clearly recognized the name of my cafe and my connection to the murder. I hope you'll bring your wife by sometime for a glass of tea, I suggested, redoubling the efforts on my smile. I'd love to meet her, and there's a fabulous view from my cafe's deck. Definitely. He gave the line another long look. I think we're ready, the woman behind me said. I stepped aside and polished off the too tiny cone, then licked my lips. Thank you again, Sandy. It was nice meeting you. I smiled and waved at the couple placing their order. It took all my self-control not to get back in line for seconds. I picked up the pace a little on my return trip to make up for the spontaneous ice cream. I hadn't come up with any amazing epiphanies on my night's outing, but I had the wind in my hair and the whispering ocean at my side. That was the real prize. My fitness bracelet beeped and I pressed the button to see what it wanted. Be more active. I loosened my too tight belt and I was certain my thighs would start chafing if I went any faster. I'd worn a size 6 when I left home for culinary school and returned in a size 12. I was trying not to let the weight gain bother me, but when I tossed in my looming 30th birthday and a murder suspicion, I didn't need a get fit to remind me I was losing control. Somewhere along the line, my life had stopped being something that happened because of me, and it had become a collection of things happening to me. I'd had about enough of that. I took longer, more purposeful strides as I headed home through the waning twilight. The problem was that I'd gotten sidetracked, wondering about the new detective, when what I should have been doing was asking everyone what they knew about Mr. Payne's most recent complaints around charm. Sandy didn't know any more than the skewed details the town gossip blog had provided. But someone else might have. Who had Mr. Payne argued with this week? How about last week? Me and Sam Smart, for starters. But we couldn't have been the only ones. Payne was always miffing someone off. I wondered idly if my aunts were having any luck coming up with alternate suspects. Imagining Clara plying folks with sugar and smiles while Fran pointed a spotlight at their faces and demanded the details. What I really needed was more than a list of people who had argued with Payne. I needed to know who was willing to kill. In other words, who had motive and what was it? Why did people commit murder? Love? Power? Money? Mr. Payne didn't seem the sort to care about any of those things. He'd been divorced for a decade and didn't appear to be wealthy. His kids were grown. He'd long ago retired from everything except the town council, which was his sole obsession. So who would want him dead and why? I had nothing. My breaths grew short as my quick steps hauled me farther away down the beach. The sense of freedom was invigorating. But the stitch in my side was not. I stopped to pant and grip my aching ribs. I'd never been much of a land animal. Put me in a kayak or toss me in the ocean, however, and I was home. Maybe when the weather warmed, I'd trade in my walking shoes for something with fins. Up ahead, a shadow bobbed swiftly in my direction. I considered hiding, but there was nowhere to go. I had 3 feet of boardwalk to get out of the way and zero ability to run. Whoever was headed in my direction was doomed to see me bent at the waist and regretting 250's worth of praline dream. Everly? A familiar female voice danced in the darkness. My childhood friend, Amelia, blinked into existence beneath a cone of lamplight, carrying a stack of books. Amelia!
I hastened my pace, a wide smile growing on my lips. "How are you?" she asked, adjusting the tomes against her chest and hugging me with one arm. "I'm so sorry I didn't call or stop by today. I heard about everything that happened last night, but I had 10 million things to do and the store was just so busy. Are you doing okay? You should hear the crazy things folks are saying." I waved her worry away, too thankful to see her face to care what the local gossips were saying. "I'm fine, but I've missed you so much. You look fantastic. And I saw your store today when I went to visit my aunt's. It looks bigger. Did you expand?" Amelia stepped back with a proud smile. Charming Reeds had a big remodel last summer. I couldn't expand, but I found a better way to use the space. It really made a difference. Thank you for noticing. A moment later, her smile drooped. "Are you sure you're okay? This town's been so brazen with the gossip." I puffed out my cheeks and a deep sigh blew free from my chest. "I'm okay, and I'm going to find out who really killed Mr. Payne." I nodded to encourage myself. I had means and motive for finding justice, but not for murder. "I'll clear my name." Amelia's narrow brows stretched over wide sapphire blue eyes, and she reached for the headband tucked into her blonde hair. "How?" "I don't know." She blinked several times. "Okay. Well, when you do, I'm glad to help." She hoisted the load in her arms. "Would you like a book?" I laughed. Sure. I examined the myriad titles with wonder. "Why are you carrying this lovely selection along the boardwalk at night? Find a lot of readers out here, do you?" "Don't be silly. I'm only carrying them because the wheel on my wagon broke." She shifted the spines in my direction. "Everyone loves a good book, right?" Her eyes twinkled with pride. Amelia had had her life plotted out since high school, right down to her bookstore on Main Street, where she kept enough literary adventures for all of Charm to get lost in forever. "Go on, pick your poison." She frowned. "Oh, I didn't mean that. It's an expression." "It's fine." I took a worn copy of Little Women and a hefty-looking recipe book by Good Housekeeping, one of those vintage numbers where they instructed you to grease every pan with lard and featured an entire section devoted to practical uses of Spam. I smiled as I balanced the books in my arms. The cookbook weighed at least 5 pounds, or about half as much as any one of the finished Spam recipes. "How was cooking school?" Amelia asked suddenly. I feel like I should know this, but I don't." "I quit." I pursed my lips and focused my attention on the horizon straight ahead. "It was nice, but it didn't work out." "Sorry, I didn't know." "Wasn't meant to be," I said. "But I learned a lot about technique and running a kitchen. I'm sure I can put all that knowledge to good use at Sun, Sand, and Tea." "Well, I'm glad you're back," she said. "Me too." And it was true, despite the mess I'd fallen into last night when I found Mr. Payne's body. Part of me wished I'd have finished culinary school, but there was no point in feeling too bad about dreams lost. After all, I had also planned to marry a cowboy, and there was no doubt that would have been a disaster if it had gone my way. I turned my attention back to Amelia. "Did you say you're carrying these books because your wagon's busted?" I puzzled over the odd explanation. "Did she normally take her books for an evening walk?" "Are these new donations? Did you just make a pickup?" "Oh, no. These are from the little library I put up last week by the beach access parking lot. I try to switch the inventory every few days for variety and refill when the stock is low. Plus, I make sure there are plenty of my business cards in the little holder." Amelia's little libraries were the cutest things on the boardwalk, and she had several more throughout the town. Some were designed to look like giant birdhouses, others like big wooden tomes. Most stood on a sturdy post, but all were whimsically painted and held a great selection of books. The little library concept worked on a need-one, take-one premise, and seemed like a great way to get readers to stop by her store. Smart. I wonder if I should make some business cards or maybe takeout menus for the cafe. I turned the little rectangle over in my fingertips.
These are really cute. Where did you get them?
I made them, she smiled proudly. They're not hard, and menus won't be either. I can help you design yours if you want.
I'd love it. A gust of wind whipped our hair and fluttered our clothes. Amelia turned her small face skyward with a frown.
I'd better get going before it gets much later.
Of course. Hey, you should stop by sometime, I told her. We should catch up.
Okay, she beamed. This week, then. I'll come by for tea.
That sounds perfect.
Amelia took a few steps backward.
I'd come now if I could, but I have two more little libraries to check in on, and I left Charming Reads open while I ran out. I mean, my dad is there, but he's probably asleep in the archives.
I lifted my books in goodbye.
See you soon.
My steps were lighter after running into Amelia, if not faster. By the time the creepy crime scene tape near my house came into view, I'd forgotten about Mr. Payne's murder for a blissful few minutes. The yellow plastic fluttered loosely in the breeze, having been partially knocked away by wildlife or the wind. I tried not to look, but memories of Mr. Payne's slack face forced their way into my head and stalled my antsy feet. Should I fix the broken tape? My gut said to leave it alone, but my head worried that someone might mistake the down barrier as an invitation to butt in while the investigation was still underway and maybe disturb crucial evidence that could lead to the killer. I checked over both shoulders for looky-loos. Amelia's silhouette was nearly invisible in the distance behind me, and a pair of tiny figures near the surf were too far away to identify. I gave myself a pep talk, then reached for the broken tape. It was too short to retie easily. I took another reluctant step forward and yanked one of the little wooden pegs from the ground, then moved it closer by a foot. I jammed it back into the soggy earth and grabbed the loose tape ends. There. Now I could tie the two together and protect the area within. As I leaned over, my toe caught on an old busted boat oar and I pitched forward, catching myself with an outstretched hand.
Whoa!
A rustling sound drew my attention, and I righted myself in a hurry, tossing the oar aside. I imagined an alligator lurking in the weeds and swallowing me whole. The entire town would speculate that I'd run away to hide my guilt over Mr. Payne's murder.
Hello?
I called. No one answered. I stepped away from the sound, back toward the safety of the wide planked boardwalk, when something small and blue caught my eye in the waving grass. Not far, I realized, from where the odd rustling had occurred. I peered down into the darkness, hands on my knees, begging my eyes for better night vision.
What are you?
I asked the object, creeping back the way I'd come. Another nearby sound stopped my heart, and I jerked around in a tight 180, sweeping my gaze from left to right and turning my back on the small blue item. I strained to see the source of movement in the darkness, but there was nothing. Instinct told me someone was near. A shiver of fear ran down my spine and curled my toes inside my sneakers. What if it was Mr. Payne's killer returning to the scene of the crime? I'd barely completed the thought before something broad and sturdy collided with my backside. I lurched forward toward the murky water, praying I wasn't met by a hungry gator. A yelp burst from my lips as I fumbled to remain upright, but a half heartbeat later, a second resounding smack sent me tail over tea kettle into the marsh. The scream I let out as I fell into the water was nearly enough to unhinge my jaw. I choked on mouthfuls of duckweed and mud as I jolted out of the marsh, clawing my way back through the crime scene to safety. The muck sucked one of my shoes off in its desperation to keep me, and a cloud of gnats settled around my head like dirt following pig pen on peanuts. The worn and busted boat oar rattled to a standstill on the boardwalk, abandoned by whoever had used it against me. I collapsed beside it in a fit of tears, lungs burning, skin crawling. I swallowed back a second scream and wiped yuck from my nose and eyes. There was no one visible in any direction, save the set of distant figures in the surf,
now near enough to recognize as a pair of tween boys, collecting sand and shells and swinging buckets. Whoever had done this to me was gone, and they'd taken whatever I'd seen in the weeds with them. Chapter 5. I was up and dressed in time to watch the sunrise with Lou. I hadn't slept well. Mostly, I relived being whacked on the backside and face-planted into the muck. It was the most humiliating experience of my life. I still wasn't sure if having no witnesses was a blessing or a curse. I'd started to dial the police and report my assault at least a dozen times, but frankly, the only thing injured was my pride. And aside from the pound of cattail fluff caught in my hair and clogging my shower drain, there was no proof the attack even happened. There was, however, an Everly-shaped mud mark raked through Mr. Payne's crime scene. Besides, I was reluctant to draw Detective Hayes' attention again, and any new police report from me would undoubtedly be turned over to the man investigating me for murder. He'd complain that I'd messed with the broken tape and nosed into the restricted area. I had to admit that from his perspective, I probably looked more meddlesome than helpful. Thankfully, that was about to change. Everly? Aunt Clara's sweet voice carried up from the garden to my ears. It was the sort of sound that tamed beasts and enchanted fairies. If she were a vending machine, Clara would dispense hugs. Aunt Fran would dole out sass. I'd probably provide unsound judgment. I hopped out of my rocker and leaned over the crisp white deck railing. Hello! Good morning! Aunt Clara was alone. Her pale hair floated in the wind around her shoulders, like clouds against the backdrop of a peaceful surf. She pressed a floppy straw hat to her head with one hand and balanced her vintage beach bicycle with the other. Its wire handlebar basket was filled with fresh flowers wrapped in newspaper and what looked like an old blue watering can. Come up! I ran through the cafe in bare feet, leaving the glass patio door open behind me to invite the ocean inside. But I'd latch the screen in case Lou got any ideas about becoming an indoor seagull. I beat her to my front porch and waited on the stairs. I'm so glad you're here, I called over the railing. Thank you for agreeing to watch the shop this morning. Aunt Clara rested her bicycle against my wooden handrail and gathered the things from her basket. It's no trouble. I brought you some flowers. Every place needs flowers. I pressed the door wide with one hip and waited for her to pass. They're beautiful. She kissed my cheek on her way across the threshold. I'm sorry Fran couldn't make it. She's elbow deep in beeswax. It's okay. I'll visit her later. I smiled tentatively. Can we talk? Always. I didn't want to repeat what had happened at the marsh out loud, but the episode had haunted me all night. And I doubted I'd sleep again until I told someone. I needed to know if I was wrong to worry my attacker might have been Mr. Payne's killer and wanted to hear it was okay to still feel afraid, even in the light of day. You're not going to like it. Aunt Clara filled two jars with tea and pushed one in my direction. You can tell me anything, Everly. Okay. I started with the broken crime scene tape. Then ended with the abandoned ore and the insanely long shower I'd needed to feel clean again. Are you hurt badly? She asked, eyes wide with fear. Why didn't you call us? Have you seen a doctor? She covered her mouth with one hand and color drained from her cheeks. I'm fine, I promised. Shaken, but okay. You could have been killed. I thought the same thing in a moment of panic. But I was only paddled, humiliated, basically, and left to cry alone. I kept the paddle. She wrapped me in her arms and cradled my head to her shoulder the way she had all my life whenever I was upset. Poor darling. If a thing couldn't be fixed inside Aunt Clara's hug, it probably couldn't be fixed at all. Too soon, she kissed my head and released me. What did the police say? They're looking into it, I hope. That's the second act of aggression this town has had in as many days. We can't have some lunatic on the loose attacking people.
She returned to her tea and rested her elbows on the counter, setting her chin in her hands. Well, I debated how to answer honestly. I'd stayed awake devising acceptable reasons to avoid calling the police, but hadn't made a plan for telling my aunts that I decided against it.
You told the police, she insisted.
No.
Why not? She cried. You were assaulted. Someone needs to have record of that.
I'll report it, I said, unsure if that was true. I just wasn't up to it last night. I'm still not sure there's even a point.
There's a point. Wait until Fran hears about this.
Where did you say she is? I asked, changing the subject. Did you say she's doing something with wax?
Aunt Clara gave me a long look, probably debating how hard to push me on the police report. She relented with a sigh. Well, I probably shouldn't say, she began. But Fran met a man last night and they hit it off. I steepled my fingers and wiggled my brows in anticipation of the full story. Knowing my aunts, it could be anything. I prepared to be shocked.
Do tell. Aunt Clara took a moment to consider my goofy face.
Fine. His name is Henry, and he's a 4-star general from the Union Army. Everyone knows that Fran is a sucker for a man in uniform, so she's promised to make him 280 wax sticks for sealing invitations to the Civil War reenactment down at Atlantic Beach next month. My shoulders drooped in relief. Henry was a general in the pretend Union Army. For a moment, I thought poor Aunt Clara's mind had finally gone out to pasture.
Well, at least tell me he was handsome, I teased.
Aunt Clara filled the broad metal watering can with cold water and set it on my counter. She unpacked the flowers and arranged them skillfully. He was. But Fran was never a sucker for a pretty face. That's always been me. She's a shrewd businesswoman who loves a nice fitting uniform. Their relationship is doomed anyway. He's a Yankee.
Can't have that, I smiled. Where's he from originally?
I watched as she finished the arrangement and carried it to my cozy reading area in the corner. She set the watering can vase on the wicker coffee table. Philadelphia.
Ah.
He was out of luck with Fran then. Every woman had a line she wouldn't cross when it came to the men in her life. Fran's was the Mason-Dixon.
Well, I'm sorry I missed Aunt Fran today, but I'm very glad you're here. I have a mission.
She returned to my counter and divided the remaining blooms into a half dozen mason jars, then carried those to the cafe tables. It's no problem. I was coming by this morning anyway.
You were?
Mm-hmm. I'd already invited some friends to meet me here for tea. Do you think you could say hello and give them a little talk about sun, sand, and tea?
Friends?
I wrinkled my nose and tried to recall the last time I'd seen either of my aunts out with friends. A coalition of beekeepers popped into my mind, all arriving in their hooded suits for tea. I smiled. Honestly, I didn't care what anyone arrived in as long as they arrived. Aunt Clara fluffed and adjusted the brightly colored blooms.
They're fellow historians, she said. I met them last month when I dropped in on one of their meetings. Their official group name is the Society for the Preservation and Retelling of Unrecorded History. Kitty Hawk Charter, she added. I've tried to get a group started in Charm for years, but there just isn't enough interest.
There's a group dedicated to retelling unrecorded history? I asked. That sounds like a club for sharing really old gossip.
Pish posh, she chided. Just because no one wrote it down doesn't mean it wasn't true. And just because people do write something down doesn't mean it is true.
Can't argue with that. I thought of the mean blog commenters.
So what's the temperature on the town charmer today? I asked carefully.
Cold, she answered.
The blogger seems to be covering the situation fairly, but there hasn't been much new information, so the content has gotten creative.
My tummy rolled.
I'd considered reading the blog with my morning coffee, but assumed that would be a terrible way to start my day, and I wanted to stay positive. Still, I needed to know what people were saying about me if I was going to turn the bad press around. "Creative?" I asked.
"Yeah, the charts and graphs don't help."
"There are charts?"
She nodded, flipping one palm out, then the other. "Before you left, no crime. 3 months after your return, murder."
Aunt Clara shook her head.
"The constant polling keeps it all going. What do we really know about Everly Swan?" She intoned.
"Is the Swan family curse growing?"
"Great. Now folks were talking about my family's 300-year string of bad luck as if it really was a curse.
The commenters must love all those opportunities for negativity."
"There are only a few haters," she argued.
"You get those everywhere.
Most charmers are reasonable and curious.
You just need to get out and talk to them. Pull back the curtain."
I let the subject drop. It only took a few haters to stoke the fire currently destroying my reputation, and I wasn't sure how to mend fences with the public at large, especially when I hadn't done anything wrong. Aunt Clara decorated my tables with her usual pizzazz and unfettered verve.
"I thought this would be the perfect location for the Preservation Society's April meeting, so I made the suggestion and voila.
Plus, I've been wanting to get by and bring you some flowers. The bees are sending our beds into a tizzy, pollinating everything. I can barely keep up. We'll be overrun in no time at this rate." She placed the final jar, then turned to admire her work.
"Now isn't that nicer? Flowers bring the outside in."
She closed her eyes and opened her arms wide, palms up.
"Feel that energy?"
"Uh-huh." I went to the cafe fridge and unloaded several trays of pre-poured sweet tea in sample-sized cups. I'd put my sleepless hours last night to good use, slicking sun sand and tea stickers onto each unit and sealing them with matching lids. "I made an extra batch of Grandma's favorite recipe, and I'm going to take it to town today. Remind everyone that I'm not a bad guy, and my tea's worth trying."
"That's the spirit," she smiled. "Good for you. But how are you going to get all that into town?"
I waggled my eyebrows, then went to the closet for my surprise. Ta-da! I returned with my childhood wagon, a radio flyer that was once red and rusted, but now sported a happy coat of aqua paint with bold white stripes and my shop name stenciled down the middle in bright yellow.
"That's adorable," Aunt Clara cooed.
She clapped once and leaned in for a closer look.
"Amelia gave me the idea when I ran into her last night hauling books. You left the wagon here when you helped me move in, and I found it again while I was cleaning. I had plenty of paint left over from the cafe renovation, so I gave it a makeover. You really like it?"
"Like it? I love this wagon. I remember when you used to fit inside it. You, your blanket, and about 100 sand toys."
The sound of footfalls drew my attention to the front porch. Aunt Clara perked up. "They're here."
She hustled to the door and waved a small crowd of people inside. "Come in." She hugged the guests one by one, kissed their cheeks, and squeezed their hands.
"Everyone, this is my grandniece, Everly Swan. Everly, this is the Society for the Preservation and Retelling of Unrecorded History, Kitty Hawk Chapter."
The group seated themselves at my newly decorated tables, filling all but two of the chairs, then turned expectant eyes on me.
"Welcome to Sun, Sand, and Tea," I said. So glad y'all could make it this morning."
I hustled around the counter and lined up some clean jars.
"What can I get started for you? Something specific? Just a whole lot of samples? Anything? Everything?"
I hiked up my smile and hoped they were paying customers. "Peach tea," one woman called.
"Me too,"
several voices echoed. I turned wide eyes to Aunt Clara. Detective Hayes and his team of badge thieves had stolen my peach tea,
and I hadn't bothered making more since the whole town thought it was poison.
Oh, Aunt Clara swept dramatically in my direction, dragging her fingertips over the counter like an actress on stage.
Peach is very good, but you haven't lived until you've tried Everly's.
She turned her back to the crowd and lifted overplucked eyebrows at me.
Help me now, sweetie. What is it you name that life-changing blend? It's completely slipped my mind.
Honey ginger? I named the first tea that came to my mind.
That's the one,
Aunt Clara agreed.
And the deer uses honey from our hives to make it. It's fantastic. So is the vanilla and lavender tea. That's a longtime favorite of mine, too.
I poured a few glasses of honey ginger. The lavender comes from the family homestead as well. There were acres of every flower and herb I'd ever want at Clara and Fran's home. The land had been passed down for generations, swan woman to swan woman, and cultivated by the very best. One sad day, it would all be mine. Given a choice, I'd prefer keeping my aunts forever.
Do you also raise produce? Someone asked.
Heavens no, Clara shook her head vehemently. For that, Everly calls the goat lady.
The group looked at me. I lined up another row of jars and filled them with the various flavors of the day.
The goat lady has the only truly organic farm on the island, I explained. It's where we get our fruits, veggies, poultry, and dairy. Her real name is Hannah, but I think she actually prefers being called the goat lady.
I smiled. She moved from Russia to America to study English because she was a teacher back home, but she fell in love and stayed. She's been farming here ever since, maybe 20 years now. Hannah was one of my favorite people in the world. She raised pygmy goats and made their milk into everything from soap to cheese, and I was pretty sure her garden was tended by fairies. Everything that came from Hannah's farm was magical. I poured the final glass of tea and beamed. The samples are ready. I moved through the room, setting an array of teas on each table. Drink up. Enjoy. Will y'all be doing anything else while you're in charm today? Clara drummed on the counter in a cute little rhythm.
First, we're going to enjoy your tea and tour your home. Then we'll have a quick walk along the beach and boardwalk, a visit to Blessed Bee, and dinner at the homestead tonight where I can show off the family estate, the bees, the gardens, and Fran's heavenly cooking.
That sounds like a full day. I eyeballed my wagon full of sweating cups. Maybe I should do this another time? I looked at Aunt Clara for advice. She hadn't said anything about all these plans when I asked her to watch the shop for an hour or two.
Nope.
She waved her fingers at me.
You go.
We'll be here long enough for you to deliver your samples and say hello to the locals. Maybe make a stop at the police station while you're out, she suggested.
They'd probably love some tea.
If you get caught up, don't worry about it. I'll flip the clothes sign on our way out.
Wait.
I worked backward through the conversation. Did you say you're going to tour my home? The words had just made it to my brain. I wasn't sure how I felt about it, but at least I had cleaned up after the police had tossed it.
Clara lifted her jar to her lips and smiled behind the rim. She cast her gaze across the crowded tables and addressed her friends, who hung on her every word.
Did you know that this home is more than 170 years old? It was originally commissioned by a wealthy businessman up north for an extremely beautiful young woman named Magnolia Bain. A distant relative of ours, if I'm not mistaken.
She flicked a glance my way. The crowd gave a collective, ooh.
I lifted the wagon handle and started for the door. If I didn't hurry, the ice would melt before I made it to Main Street.
Her beau was more than 20 years her senior, and married, Aunt Clara said.
Ah. He had children older than Magnolia, but that didn't matter to either of them. Their love was the stuff other women whispered about over cards and toddies. It's said that the affair was torrid and shameless, often resulting in undrawn blinds after dark.
They were simply too caught up in one another to care or remember that the man was married, for goodness sake. She made eye contact with everyone in the room, giving each listener a moment to let it all settle in. One night, the man's wife came looking for him, worried his carriage had taken a spill or that he'd been robbed of his escort, and she discovered him in Magnolia's arms. Saw it with her own eyes right through the open window. His wife was so wretched, she walked straight into the sea. And when the young girl realized her actions had caused the death of another woman, she cast herself from the roof tower. The man was left to grow mad in these very halls, unable to leave the place where his selfishness had ended the lives of the women he loved. The jaws of Aunt Clara's friends were nearly on the floor as she wound the far-fetched tale into something completely salacious and utterly of her own making. I maneuvered the wagon onto the porch outside the door. I had a killer to catch and wares to peddle. I couldn't afford to be distracted by Aunt Clara's retellings of unrecorded history. Those stories of my new home fascinated me. I'd dreamed of living here since the first time I'd seen the property as a child. When it came on the market the day I moved home, I knew it was fate. When I realized I could own it and open my iced tea shop inside, I couldn't think of anything else until it was mine. "What happened to the man?" a woman at the counter asked. Clara hummed softly before speaking, probably buying time to formulate the best answer. "Some people still hear him calling for her at night, roaming the beach in search of his lost love." "The wife or the mistress?" "Who's to say?" Aunt Clara answered grimly. "Though the spirit of one of the women is said to wander the town as a weathered old cat, ragged from years of heartbreak and homelessness. Which woman is anyone's guess? Maybe after all these years, she's become both." A gasp broke their silence. I rolled my eyes. "I'll be back. Thank you all so much for coming. And thank you, Aunt Clara, for looking after my fictitiously haunted property," I thought to myself. I gave the porch stairs a long look, then rethought my plan. I'd have to empty the wagon and take it down first, then come back for the drinks and reload at the bottom. "It was a sign," Clara's voice carried through the doorway as I returned from my first trip down the steps. "Fran and I knew the moment Everly wanted to come home that this property would show up on the market, and it did. An anonymous seller asked only as much as Everly could afford to pay, and the deal was taken care of online. Can you believe that? She never even met the owner."
"Who was the owner?" someone asked.
"All we know is that his name was Lou," Clara whispered. I stared through the open door, trays of tea stacked too tall in my arms. Did she say Lou? Like the seagull? I shook my head. That was probably where she'd come up with the name. She'd stolen it from the freeloading bird who begged for my leftover shrimp and scallops. "The house is perfect for Everly in so many ways, but historically there couldn't be a better one," Clara continued. "The Swan women have been cursed in love for centuries. Magnolia Bain, distant relative or not, was no different than the rest of us. Everly will find camaraderie of spirit here, I think." I rubbed the lines off my forehead and refocused on my mission to drum up some business and find Sam Smart. Sam would know if Mr. Payne had been in a standoff with another business owner, and I could use the lead. I certainly didn't need to hear my family legends recounted to know I was unlucky in love. That truth spoke for itself. The walk into town was hot. I'd chosen jeans and a t-shirt with the Sun Sand and Tea logo across the back, but I should have worn shorts. By the time I reached Main Street, the relentless southern sun was making short work of the ice cubes in my tea samples and short-circuiting my brain. Everyone I'd met along the boardwalk had declined my offering, and a few had all but run away when they saw me coming, Unloading free sweet tea was going to be harder than I expected. "Sweet tea?" I asked Mrs. Dubiel, my elementary school librarian, as she stepped onto the sidewalk in front of me. She smiled brightly at my goodies.
"Why, yes, thank you."
I delivered her a cup and napkin. She shook my hand and savored her drink with a smile.
"Did you know Benedict Payne?"
I asked. She was in his age group and had been on the island as long as I could remember, though she didn't seem to remember me.
"Yes."
She looked lovingly at her cup, enamored by the tea.
"Benedict was a nice man. Shame what happened. This has a lovely flavor. It reminds me of growing up in Georgia."
"Thank you," I beamed. "It's an old family recipe." "Had you talked to Mr. Payne recently?"
"No, not in years. He welcomed my family to town after we moved in and brought a basket of items from the local shops. Let us know where we could buy anything we needed on the island. No need to leave town."
That sounded like him. It also sounded like another dead end. I offered her a business card.
"I'm glad you enjoyed the tea sample. Stop in and see me anytime at Sun, Sand, and Tea. I have 20 signature blends and keep a dozen flavors on tap most days."
The woman raised her drink slowly, twisting the cup until the logo came into view. Her gaze flicked to mine, then back to the logo. Recognition dawned on her face as she aligned my presence with the memory of a sand-covered girl in pigtails, no doubt. Her smile tightened and she hurried away.
"Have a nice day," I called after her.
So far, this hadn't become the fruitful endeavor I'd imagined. As I gazed after her, a mom and three boys dragged themselves off the boardwalk, heading toward a line of parked cars near the road. I waved.
"Alicia?"
I'd played the trumpet beside her little sister in the fifth grade band. Alicia was in high school then, and she'd seemed so much older than me. But time had closed the age gap between us. Today, she looked my age. Her boys were covered in sand from their knees down and dripping with sweat everywhere else. She looked like she could use a drink.
"Tea?"
I offered. I reached for a cup, certain to make her day. She put a hand on the smallest boy's shoulder.
"No, thank you."
I dropped my hand back to my side but held the smile.
"Okay,"
I nodded at her and the boys.
"It's nice to see you."
"Whoa," the middle-sized child rushed over to my cart. "Is this the stuff from the blog?"
He turned crazed eyes on me.
"Can I have some?"
"Yes?" Suddenly, I wasn't sure. My new confidence began to shrink beneath Alicia's wide-eyed stare.
"Here."
He gathered three cups in his hands and gave one to each of his brothers.
"You first,"
he told the smallest one. The boy removed the lid and sniffed the contents curiously.
"No way! You!"
Panic and humiliation flooded my chest. "You don't need to drink that," I said.
"It's fine. Not everyone likes tea."
The oldest lifted his tea and smiled bravely.
"I do."
He shot his younger brother a look.
"Man, don't be dumb. She's not planning to take out the town. You think she's going door to door in broad daylight delivering poison?"
He removed the lid and gulped his cup dry. Alicia made a strangled sound.
"I am so sorry," she said to me, finally snapping into action. "We're late for something. I'd stay and visit, but I really have to go."
"Come on, boys."
She took the other two cups away and hurried her children toward the public parking lot, tossing the tea into a nearby garbage can.
"Hustle,"
she growled as they piled into the car. "You're all grounded forever." The oldest kid tipped his head back and laughed. I tried not to stare as they drove away. My eyes stung as if I'd been slapped. Is this really where I stand with the town? Barely home 3 months and already I was a joke? All because someone killed a local outside my shop and I'd found him? That wasn't fair, and it wouldn't do at all. I spent the next hour walking the blocks of storefronts, looking for someone in need of refreshment or willing to talk about Mr. Payne. It wasn't easy.
The streets were as still as a Wild West town when a gunslinger rode in. Most of the stores were empty, and a few, like Sam's Realty office, were closed, with a clock sign in the window, "Be back soon." Where was everyone? I stopped at the corner of Main and Middletown, deciding where to go next, or if I should give up. Middletown Street acted as the island equator, stretching from Bayview, the street that faced the bay,